Jehovah Israel, Amen Shema Israel.
And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamps to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light, the National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. Our dramatic program today, Brandeis, written by Morton Wishengrad, is the ninth in a series of 13 programs on American Jewish regional history, presented in observance of the 20th year of the Eternal Light. I have a story to tell you, but you cannot understand my story unless you understand this fact. And the fact is this: every step you take toward the future leaves behind a footprint of the past. And there is no escape from the past, nor should there be. For a man cannot escape his heritage. If it is good, he may redeem it, but no more. I know this. You must know it. In the year 1910, in the 54th year of his life, Louis Dembitz Brandeis knew it also. What are the things a man may not forget? I say to you that I may not forget that I am pursued by the Middle Ages, like a neurotic haunted by a phantom dream. My days are warm with the memory of 3,000 years of civilization, but my sleep is fitful with the cry of 2,000 years of persecution. And both by day and by night, I am a Jew. Now, I shall tell you the story. On a day more than 35 years ago, in the city of Boston, I sat in the offices of the firm of Brandeis, Dunbar, and Nutter, and listened to a man with blue eyes talk to two visitors.
Mr. Kelly, what is your grievance? Why did the shoe workers threaten this strike against my client, Mr. Williams?
Well, it's pretty simple, Mr. Brandeis. The men can't live on what they get.
Williams, is this true?
You're my lawyer, Brandeis. You know I pay my men $18 a week. Now, for these times, it's not a bad wage.
No, we ain't denying that, Mr. Williams. It ain't a bad wage.
Oh, you admit that?
Well, sure, we admit that.
And why do you want to strike?
We want more money, that's why.
Brandeis, I told you there was no point in asking them here. The workers are unreasonable, absolutely unreasonable.
Mr. Kelly, let's be clear about this. You admit that Mr. Williams pays a decent wage.
Yeah, highest in the business, yeah. Sure.
Yet you want more? Aren't you being a little unfair?
No, sir. You ask him about the two long slack seasons when the men are laid off.
Are there slack seasons, Mr. Williams?
Well, naturally. It's a seasonal industry.
But we don't live seasonal. We live 52 weeks, same as you. Average our fancy pay over the year, and what do we get? I'll tell you. A gripe in the belly and no coal in the stove.
Mr. Williams, I'd like your figures on seasonal layoff.
Now, look here, Brandeis. I'm a manufacturer, not a settlement house worker. What do they want me to do? Give them champagne for breakfast, caviar for supper? I pay good wages, and I'm not raising them for anybody.
Well, don't you think Mr. Kelly has a point to what he's saying?
Well, you tell him my point. You're my lawyer. I pay you, not him. Don't forget that little thing.
Oh, I haven't forgotten it, sir. But wouldn't it be a rather unfortunate thing for a lawyer to advocate something which he can't approve as a citizen?
Listen, I hired a lawyer, not a citizen.
Perhaps, Mr. Williams, when you hired me, you hired both.
Oh, I did I?
I think perhaps you did.
All right, Mr. Citizen. You just go right ahead and sit behind this desk. Me, I'm going out to get me a lawyer.
Well, Mr. Brandeis, you talk mighty funny for a conservative.
Funny? I don't think so. There was a time when the working relationship was between a master and servant.
Yeah.
Today it's between employer and employee.
Mm.
All I want is to make both employer and employee partners. partners to a contract.
Yeah, but that's still pretty radical for Mr. Williams.
So are Isaiah and Amos. Mr. Kelly, that gives me an idea. Excuse me.
Yeah, of course. Well, you go right ahead.
Yes, Mr. Brandeis?
Have you finished my holiday list?
Yes, I have, sir.
Well, please add another item, will you? A book.
Of course, sir. For the children?
No, for Mr. Williams.
Yes, sir.
Inscribe my compliments, and please send him a copy of the Bible.
Whitman, suppose you do the talking.
All right, Abbott. Mr. Brandeis, a number of Boston businessmen have organized a committee. A committee that needs some legal advice in a hurry.
Yes?
I believe your firm represents the Great American Assurance Society?
Yes, we handle their local matters.
You know much about them, Mr. Brandeis?
Good deal. Why?
Abbott and I are policyholders. Pretty big policyholders. Abbott, you tell Mr. Brandeis what you found.
Something pretty unpleasant. A few of the vice presidents have formed a syndicate. They're buying securities with treasury funds.
If the securities are sound, I don't see what's wrong.
Oh, the securities are sound enough. What's wrong, though, is that they're buying the securities for themselves.
Can you prove that?
Look at this. Sworn affidavits.
Oh. Well, they're using other people's money, aren't they?
Brandeis, we know you represent the company. We're asking now if you want to represent us against the company.
Mr. Brandeis, if this embarrasses you as a lawyer, why, tell us.
It's embarrassing, all right. I'm embarrassed to be the lawyer for the company.
Then you'll take this case?
I'll be glad to, Mr. Whitman.
Fine. We're prepared to give you a retainer of $10,000.
No, Mr. Whitman.
No, huh? Well, they told us you were a good businessman. We'll make it $15,000.
You don't understand. I'll take the case, but without fee. This isn't a private matter. I don't think I have a right to charge the public for my services.
Oh, we can afford to pay, Mr. Brandeis.
All right, Whitman. I'll take half of what you're getting from this.
Well, I'm getting nothing.
Good. I'll take half of that.
Well, Mr. Brandeis, I think I know now why your friends call you a liberal.
Thank you, sir. But, Mr. Abbott, what do my enemies call me?
What do you suppose, Mr. Brandeis?
You tell me.
Why, Mr. Brandeis, they call you a Jew.
Louis Dembitz Brandeis smiled. To be called a Jew amused him. Had not Uncle Louis Dembitz been one of the three men to nominate Abraham Lincoln for president? Had he not himself, as a young man, sat at the feet of Emerson and Lowell? He was the man consulted by presidents, the friend of Oliver Wendell Holmes and William Allen White, and a college president called Woodrow Wilson. Yes, it was amusing to call this tall, slender, blue-eyed man a Jew. His synagogue was the court of law. His scriptures were legal precedents. His altar was social justice. Louis Brandeis smiled a puzzled smile and then dismissed the incident. But it kept recurring.
Congratulations, Mr. Brandeis. You certainly made them crawl back into the woodwork.
I believe I did, Mr. Whitman. There's a good deal of fun in being a public servant, isn't there?
Maybe. Anyhow, you got yourself some free publicity in the Tribune.
Did I?
Mm-hmm. Listen to this. Brandeis possesses the rare knowledge of knowing when to stop. When he has exasperated his opponents to the limit of their endurance, he grows gentler than a suckling dove. And
well, go on.
I'm sorry, Mr. Brandeis.
Oh, it's quite all right, Mr. Whitman. Read on.
Oh, let's just forget it.
No, please, read the rest. He grows gentler than a suckling dove, and what?
All right. When he has exasperated his opponents, he grows gentler than a suckling dove, and more persuasive than a second-hand clothes dealer trying to sacrifice himself to give you a bargain. That's pretty low, Mr. Brandeis.
Mr. Abbott was quite voracious, it seems. My friends call me a liberal, and apparently those who aren't my friends call me a Jew. If you'll excuse me, Mr. Whitman, I think I'll have to talk to my friend Feline about this. Feline, have you got a ready definition of a Jew? Yes, I seem to be in need of a definition.
Well, I don't know who the philosopher was, but someone is alleged to have said that a Jew is like everybody else, only more so.
Feline, I think I ought to meet some Jews.
That's a real coincidence, Brandeis. How would you like to go to New York and arbitrate a labor dispute?
No, I wouldn't. I've got my hands full fighting the railroad trust. What's the coincidence about the New York thing?
You've heard of the ILGWU?
Yes, the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union.
Yes.
What about them?
The New York cloakmakers are on strike. Now, it happens that many of the workers and employers are Jewish.
Well?
It's your chance to find out something about the Jews. The situation shrieks for an arbitrator.
It might be interesting at that.
You called, Mr. Brandeis?
Yes, please ask Mr. Dunbar if he wouldn't mind taking my notes and dictating the rest of my Ballinger-Glavis brief. I'm going to New York.
Hey, come on down now. You see, Mr. Brandeis, in the union, it's a real democracy. Everybody wants to talk, nobody wants to listen.
Well, Mr. Dykey, if you have no objection, I'd like one of the shop chairmen to present the case.
Sure. Hey, Moskowitz, tell Mr. Brandeis.
Well, it's very simple, Mr. Brandeis. All we want is a contract and union recognition.
That's right.
I thought you were striking for higher wages and the elimination of sweatshop conditions.
Naturally. But the union comes first.
But suppose I were able to get an increase for you and nothing else. Would you turn that down?
Look, Mr. Brandeis, my own boss isn't a bad fella. He came to America on the same boat with me. But that doesn't make him Santa Claus. Today he feels generous, so he gives us a raise. Tomorrow his wife burns the coffee and he gives us a cut. Excuse me, Mr. Brandeis. We don't want no favors. We want a union.
We've got to have a union.
And until we get it, we stay out.
Look here, Moskowitz, you can't afford to stay out any longer. Some of your people are literally starving.
We can't afford not to. If it was just for hours and wages, we'd go back tomorrow. But this is a principle. When I was a young fellow in Kishinev, I used to study the Talmud. When I came to America, I found the word I studied. They call it democracy.
Is that what the Talmud is about, Mr. Moskowitz?
Yeah, they call it something else. But that's what it's about. You know, Mr. Brandeis, it's a shame. A smart man like you should learn a little Hebrew.
Yes, I think it is a shame. Someday, perhaps someone like you should teach me.
I will. In fact, here's a small lesson right now. Look, I've written something in Hebrew.
Looks like a dentist's chart.
It spells a word. I'll say it for you. Tzedek.
Tzedek. What's it mean?
Justice and righteousness. Now, here's another word. Tzedokah. It comes from the word for justice.
Tzedokah. I see.
And tzedokah means charity. That's a wonderful thing, Mr. Brandeis. In the Hebrew language, the word for charity comes from the word that means justice and righteousness. Now, please go back to those fine bosses of ours and tell them, for us, a little less tzedokah and a little more tzedek.
Mr. Brandeis, don't believe anything that Moskowitz says. At night, he's studying to be a lawyer.
What's Mr. Moskowitz doing today?
He thinks he's an operator. Between you and me, he's a botcher. It'll be a fine day for my business when he gets his diploma.
I can't understand this. Why your association refuses to negotiate? There's such an extraordinary amount of hostility on both sides. Yet there seems to be such kinship and understanding.
If those idiots would only be sensible.
Well, that's what they want your employers to be. Sensible.
Well, that's the trouble, Brandeis. When two people are enemies, it's not such a terrible tragedy. But when they're enemies because they both want the same thing, then it's a tragedy. Please, go back
and see if you can talk some sense into those crazy lunatics.
Mr. Moskowitz, a wise man knows when to yield.
With the greatest satisfaction, Mr. Brandeis. Tell him Moskowitz says he can be the wise man. I give him the honor. Let him yield.
This is the most extraordinary strike I've ever known. It's like a passage from the Talmud with both sides trying to write a commentary.
Yes, Mr. Brandeis. I have a little boy. Papa, he says, what's democracy? Sonny, I tell him, democracy's in the classroom, in the store where Mama buys tomatoes, in the Board of Aldermen, in the polling place. But for 10 hours a day, it's not in the shop. The boss doesn't have time for it. Now, please, Mr. Brandeis, tell the boss the shop is on East Broadway. East Broadway is in New York, and New York is still in America.
So you see, I'm a little tired of being an intermediary. I brought you both together.
Like old times, eh, Moskowitz?
The association has approved an increase. Hours will be cut. Shop sanitation will be improved. Mr. Moskowitz, I think these are generous concessions.
They are, Moskowitz. We're willing to do whatever we can.
Hmm. What's the catch?
See, 1 year in law school and he wants to know what's the catch. That's what they teach in law school.
Look, mister, I know you from the old country. What's the catch?
The association will yield to all demands except union recognition.
Of course. They want to build a fine house for us. The only thing they don't want is that the house should have a foundation.
Moskowitz, don't be a stubborn mule.
Mr. Brandeis, he goes to the synagogue. Let him tell me if the words are only for Saturday or if he's supposed to practice them every day.
But he does see these things. He thinks he's making substantial concessions.
Of course.
It's a regular merry-go-round. We want a union. We want a contract. That comes first.
Mr. Moskowitz, I think you're right about this. I recognize it as a lawyer and as an American.
You can say also as a Jew.
Well, on whose side are you arguing?
Well, since it's going to cost me money, I'll argue on both sides.
Oh? And you're willing to come to terms?
Maybe. But I'll have to talk to the other employers.
Good. It's not a pleasure to be on strike.
Listen, you Talmudist, you've said enough. Mr. Brandeis, look at him. You think he's the only one who can speak a little Hebrew? Maybe I can quote a little, too. Zion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Zion b'mishpot tipodeh.
Don't break your teeth, Mr. Brandeis. Zion b'mishpot tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness.
Moskowitz, with a head like yours, couldn't you be a better operator and not such a botcher?
There it is, gentlemen. This is the first collective agreement with enforcement machinery in it.
I think it's a fine day's work.
It'll do for a start, Mr. Brandeis.
Gentlemen, I've learned something from you both. I'm 54 years old. All my life, I've worked for something I call justice. Social justice. I came here with curiosity. And I found that beneath all the bickering and the controversy and the passion, there was something the preachers call brotherhood. I found it expressed in terms of Judaism. For someone like myself, who hardly considered himself a Jew, that means a good deal.
This was a beginning for Louis Dembitz Brandeis. In the 54th year of his life, an idea burgeoning in a great man's mind, a man thinking, applying the scientific method, mixing, compounding, testing the idea, formulating a concept in the crucible of his conscience. Truly, is not this the spark of divinity that makes man only slightly less than the angels? And because he was not a closet speculator, because he was a man of action, he made his decision.
Feline.
Yes?
I seem to have suddenly discovered a heritage.
Yes?
I want to be worthy of the Jewish name. It isn't wealth, it isn't station, nor honor, nor ambition, none of those things. It's like seeing a vision. knowing that what is mean is not for us, knowing that we must speak again for social justice and for righteousness. Like Holmes, I would say that self-respect demands that we live not only honorably, but worthily.
But Brandeis, this is what you've tried to be all your life.
Yes, as an American. All my life, I've heard people speak of Americanism and Judaism as separate from each other. I know now it isn't so. Place the pattern of Americanism over Judaism, they match. Feline, a Jew is an American, in the best, in the truest, in the deepest, richest sense of the word. It makes me very proud.
What man alive has never held up a mirror to his own conscience and said to himself, "This is what I truly believe. These are the things on which I will not compromise. These are the banners I must carry. Without them, I have no integrity." In the summer of 1910, these ideas came to Louis Demitz Brandeis. And when, months later, a rabbi spoke to him of Palestine, Brandeis answered,
"I am an American, Rabbi."
"So am I. We are trying to found a refuge in Palestine for Jews who have no other land. The Jews of Middle Europe and Eastern Europe."
"How can I, as an American, support such a project?"
"Because you're an American, Mr. Brandeis."
"Rabbi, I've begun to feel that to be a better American, I must become a better Jew."
"Carry it further, Mr. Brandeis. I hold that to be a good Jew, you must help to fulfill the prophetic vision for the Holy Land."
"Perhaps you're right, Rabbi. I shall have to consider it carefully. If Palestine is to have any validity, it can't be just another small state, such as a small duchy of Luxembourg or another Montenegro. It must have a purpose greater than nationalism."
"Yes, it can have that. With the help of men like yourself, I know it must."
In the 58th year of his life, virtually in the hour when President Wilson summoned him to the Supreme Court of the United States to take his place alongside Oliver Wendell Holmes, Louis Demitz Brandeis, jurist, moralist, liberal, Jew, American, accepted the cause of Zionism and became its leader in America. And he spoke with the words of Ahad Ha'am.
"I live for the sake of the perpetuation and happiness of the community of which I am a member. I die to make room for new individuals who will mold the community afresh. When the individual thus values the community as he values his own life and strives after its happiness as though it were his individual well-being, he finds satisfaction, no longer feels so keenly the bitterness of his individual existence, because he sees the end for which he lives and suffers. I am an American, and I have come to Zionism through Americanism. Let it be for what the prophets spoke. Let it be only that. Zion b'mishpot tipodeh. Zion will be redeemed through righteousness."
If you would like a copy of today's script, please send your name and address with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. And now we take great pleasure in presenting Mr. Howard M. Holtzman of Mamaroneck, New York, lawyer, member of the Executive Committee and Board of Directors of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, and member of the Board of Overseers of the Seminary. Mr. Holtzman.
The drama which we have just heard emphasizes once more, and most beautifully, a great central truth. The truth that democracy is not simply a political procedure, but is also a system for achieving social justice. Social justice, as Brandeis conceived it, is the community's practical expression of its ethical principles. Louis D. Brandeis saw that democracy derives directly from and depends directly upon fundamental ethical concepts. Ethical concepts which have their wellsprings in the teachings of our religious heritage. Thus, it was not an accident that when, in the midst of a labor dispute, Brandeis wanted to provide a lesson in social justice to his recalcitrant client, he gave him a Bible. The ethical heritage of the Hebrew Bible, a heritage which places primary emphasis on the dignity and worth of each individual, is, of course, not the only ethical source which underlies and inspires our democracy. Other religious and ethical teachings also contribute richly to the wonderfully interwoven tapestry of the American tradition. However, as today's story of Brandeis shows, Jewish ethical principles are deeply compatible with the American goal of human dignity, brotherhood, and freedom. No man recognized that basic interrelationship more keenly or could express it more vibrantly than Morton Wishengrad, the author of today's drama. Death last year stilled his poetic voice, but his writings, combining democratic aspirations and religious inspirations, continue as a proud and lasting part of the heritage of all Americans.
Thank you, Mr. Holtzman. Our eternal light drama today, Brandeis, was written by Morton Wishengrad. Today's program was the ninth in a series of 13 programs on American Jewish regional history, marking the 20th year of the Eternal Light program series. Cantor Robert H. Siegel sang the liturgical introduction. Featured today was Kermit Murdoch as Justice Brandeis. Others in the cast were Harry Belliver, Nat Polan, Jane Amar, John McGovern, William Griffiths, Mandel Kramer, Roger DeCoven, and Leon Janney. The narrator was Norman Rose. We invite you to join us next week when The Eternal Light presents 4.5 Feet of Faith, a drama by Mark Siegel. Because of the National Football League championship game, The Eternal Light will be heard at a different time next Sunday only. Please consult your local listings for the exact time. This is Bill Wendell. Our program was directed by Kenneth McGregor. Portions of this program were pre-recorded. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. This is the NBC Radio Network.